clean up your bad manners through rough and violent means. So put the cell phone down. A safe landline, and that way I won't have to hurt you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. You have landed in Juicebox Radio. That's on CITR 101.9 FM in the Lotus Land of our very own Vancouver. We love it here, don't we? Loving this weather. So beautiful. So Caroline is not with us tonight on Juicebox, but we have a guest, and I'll be introducing him in a moment. And as always, I'm going to be taking calls tonight. So feel free to call in and contribute to the conversation we're going to be having, and I'll tell you all about that in a moment. And that number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. So do feel free to call in. Tonight's show is called Stirred, Not Shaken, for men. And the interview I'm going to be doing is with Mr. David Hatfield. Our guest tonight is a respected independent facilitator, experiential educator, trainer, and consultant. His professional interests revolve around issues of social justice, masculinity, and leadership. His passions lie in the meeting place of gender empathy and empowerment, rites of passage, conflict transformation, creativity, communication, and leadership training. This is all right off of his website. His engaging program design and facilitation is masterful and has been contracted internationally. As a specialist in male issues, David is a powerful guide in exploring notions of masculinity and as a catalyst in illuminating and supporting new possibilities for both genders. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on to Juicebox. I'm always so excited to focus on a show for men because Caroline and I, obviously, we're females, and we have a female perspective going on all the time. And I'm a major male advocate, and one of the initial startups for me doing Juicebox was that I wanted to help men empower themselves more in this often troubled masculine, sort of troubled time where I think there's some masculine oppression happening to try to balance out some of the female, female oppression that's happened. So we're sort of doing this polarization thing, and I feel that men have been getting a bit of the short end of the stick in some ways. Of course, it doesn't nearly balance the power yet, but the oppression that's been happening to men isn't really still balancing the power, but it's still, I think some men are really feeling that, so and not knowing where they stand in this world and what to do with themselves in a lot of capacities. So it's a really close to my heart to have you here, and I really appreciate your time. So excited about talking about all this stuff.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate hearing about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a rare breed, I think. I'm also a feminist. So what exactly do you do, just for the listeners? What is it that you do?
Well, the bulk of my work, you've listed a few things there that I'm involved in, but the bulk of it for sure is doing masculinity work. And for me, what that means is bringing groups of males together, and I work with all ages pretty much from about grade 6 age, around 11 or 12, right up to adult men. And in each case, with any group, I'm basically doing the same type of thing, bringing groups of males together for what's predominantly, like virtually all of them, a first-time experience of just stopping everything else and focusing on the sort of power of the gender script for males and teasing out what they think that's really about. So exploring the identity of being male as a teenager or a UBC student or an adult man.
Can you give an example maybe of that?
I let them do it themselves. So basically I ask the question, what do you feel like the world really expects from you as a man right now or a boy? When people think of teenage boys and the way they carry on conversations or TV shows.
So can you give what's a common thing that these boys or men say?
Well, almost everything that they say revolves around one idea. And I'm going to throw this out to you, okay, just for a moment. What do you think that idea is, like the core idea of masculinity in modern Western urban culture?
Well, something to do with sex or something to do with success. So money or sex, a cock or a wallet. It's got to be something about a cock or a wallet.
It's about...
Am I wrong? Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay.
They'd say it as be strong.
Right.
Okay. So you want to be a good lover, or you want to be a successful businessman, whatever. But the core concept is always about strength.
Okay.
Yeah. And then letting them articulate that. And they have so much fun doing that. It brings up so much. Even grade 6 boys can do that brainstorm in 5 minutes. We can fill 2 whole chalkboards full of their ideas.
Interesting. And do they seem the same, the older men as well? The brainstorming is kind of similar across the lifespan?
Definitely. Different language for some things.
Yes.
And some more,
descriptive words, yeah. A little bit more creativity, I'm sure, yeah.
The older men...
Dude.
Yeah, okay. The older men are bringing in, a lot more elements around being a protector, being a provider.
Right.
But again, that strength feature is always a part of it. And then just stepping back and saying, all right, so let's actually give this a name. Let's give it a name. And the name that we usually work with is the script. So the script is this body of expectations. And then years ago, I started asking this question, and it was a moment of truth for me as an educator, thinking, God, what if they don't go for this? Then it's, the whole thing's kind of lead ballooning. We've only started 45 minutes ago in this workshop. And the question I'd ask would be, so we've articulated this script, we've named it, and then they're kind of wondering, oh, so what? What are we going to do with this? And my next question is to say, raise your hand. If you can imagine a group of grade 6 boys, I just did this in Edmonton a couple weeks ago. Raise your hand if you think that this set of ideas is actually a forceful influence on your every waking hour. That's the exact wording that I use. And then I sit down and I just wait. And they giggle and they look around. And then one by one, their hands go up until the room is full of hands. That's a pivotal moment for me in all those workshops. And even as for myself as a man, every time to be reminded of the strength of those ideas on us. We acknowledge them as a society. We joke around with them. We toy with them in advertising content, et cetera. We play with them and we have good laughs with them. But we don't actually treat them for the seriousness that they actually are. Mm. Yeah.
So do you find the script, the masculine script then, is there some oppression there that you feel, that you think that men feel?
Yeah. For me, the core of it is around emotionality. And I don't think this is a controversial idea, that males in this part of the world, and that's what I'm speaking about directly, because that's where we are and that's where I've lived. Not to say these elements don't exist in other cultures as well. Boys and men don't have the same level of permission and encouragement to express their full range of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I agree.
So
so their bandwidth is much more narrow.
I don't think it...
Of emotion.
I'd say their bandwidth is as broad as anybody else's. For older men, it's as broad as when they were little boys, and for boys, it's as broad as girls. But that's not what we see. Mm-hmm. That's not what we hear, right? So they're actually learning how to sort of amputate, cut things off, minimize, diminish, internalize, et cetera. And we pay heavy prices as a society for this, and I don't think that's a controversial idea either. Mm-hmm. But we don't act like it matters as a culture, right? Mm-hmm. We don't act like the spin-off possibilities of cracking that open and making space for it are massive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that really motivates me in the work, for sure.
That's amazing. I mean, we could talk at length, and I hope we will as the conversation goes on tonight. So I get what this masculinity work is. I can kind of get an idea of what it is that you're doing and what motivates you.
Can I say one more?
Yes, please.
The sort of second large part of all the masculinity work I'm doing is, so if the first part is exploring male identity, the second one is building a sense of male community. So for boys, young men, and adult men, they're all part of communities already. Mm-hmm. School communities, family, friendship circles, work, faith groups, etc. But there's no real genuine sense of sort of systemic community among males. We're afraid of each other. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel relaxed. I think men are really relieved. You probably don't know about this, but in recent years, a lot of new public washrooms and a lot of retrofitted public washrooms have dividers now between all the urinals.
Right.
It's just one more way to compartmentalize, just a really basic function that we all do, so that you can't look at another man. You're not really encouraged to speak to him or to comment on him. He's just there doing a job. You're just there doing a job.
Hmm.
So
don't they have doors as well now? Or they're just,
I'm just meaning urinals.
Oh yeah, the urinals.
Standing up against the wall.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the stalls are still the stalls.
Well, we could talk a little bit about this, the cock issue, I think, the privacy around our genitals, but I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing for some people. I think they've got issues with their genitals and don't necessarily want other people looking at them, and it's a cause for concern and trauma for some. So I don't know, but we'll talk a little bit more about that, because I think there's a question down the line here where you maybe get into that a little bit more. Is that wrapping up your comment? Okay. So I think, I mean, this is unique work. I think it's unique in some senses, a lot of senses, and especially the way you're doing it, by the way that I've understood your work to be and what we've talked about before the show tonight. But I think it's also being done in other circles in different ways.
Sure.
So how did you get started in this kind of work? I mean, this is sort of the neo-masculinity movement or something.
Yeah, I don't know
how
what
to
it's
call
called,
it.
Really. I have no
You're
idea.
You're not a feminist. It's like the neo-masculinist, the new men movement. So in ways it is kind of rising up, and I think, again, important, as I mentioned at the top of the hour. So how did you get started in this work?
There's a series of events many years apart. So the first one, I'd say, probably close to when I was here as a UBC student. So in the early 90s, two seminal books got written, Fire in the Belly and Iron John.
Right.
The classics, right? And I read both of them as a young man in my 20s, and they had a certain amount of resonance for me and a certain amount of... like the mythopoetic writings of Robert Bly. I don't know history that well. I don't know mythology that well. So a lot of that stuff just went right over my head. It assumed a lot of a knowledge on my part in those areas, and I didn't have it. The second part was some of the men's work that got started up here in Vancouver really turned me off. Not that I was part of it.
Like
but,
what? There's a Sterling Institute of Relationship Men's.
Yeah, there was a couple of Sterling men.
That?
And I don't want to diss the whole Sterling movement because I'm not familiar with it. And I do want to say that the men that I knew who were involved with that, the way they carried that body of whatever experience they'd had was kind of off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. It was very confrontational, in your face. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be amping up competition, and that was part of it. The other part was the writings about that men's movement at the time became very satirical and cynical. Mm-hmm. And basically what I heard being said about it was that the joke was that men were going off into the woods on the weekend, taking off all their clothes, playing drums and running around pretending they were doing something important. And I think that was diminishing for a lot of men who were involved in that work as well. Mm. So
I was heavily involved, so I know a lot about it.
Okay.
My entire family was involved.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. So my first go-round with the whole men's issue stuff was kind of very mixed. And the next sort of piece that happened for me was working for the Vancouver School Board as a youth and family worker.
Okay.
And doing a lot of it on call because I was a musician at the time and touring, so I was working on call. And just watching classrooms full of boys, you know, a different classroom full of boys every couple of days, and watching how they were really very out of sorts in that system. Mm. And that there was a lot of acknowledgement of that by teachers and staff and administration, yet not a whole lot of things being done about it. So that was part of a wake-up. And then it got more intense. I joined a Vancouver-based violence prevention, a youth violence prevention program that did gender-separate work. So there was a separation of boys and girls and a separate program for them.
To deal with violence
in youth. Talk about violence, you know, youth-on-youth violence, et cetera. Sexualized violence and straight-up physical violence, emotional violence, et cetera.
Okay.
And after a couple years of doing that, was invited to take more of a programming and management role, and found that the two programs, the boys and the girls, were not aligned in values. Mm. And after some query with the founder, realized, was told that, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be, and the bias was favoring girls and women. So that wasn't cool to me. I felt like, well, the basic tone of any sort of sexism education should be that sexism's not cool any direction it's going.
Right.
So I chose to leave the organization, and a random trip to go visit my sister in New Zealand turned into meeting the sort of lightning rod male leader of this really ripping, happening men's movement in New Zealand that I had no idea existed.
Cool.
So they're called Essentially Men and Man
Alive.
So
this is some of the influence and inspiration that you've gained in this path. So
going down
in
there
in New Zealand, and it was called Men?
Essentially Men.
Essentially Men.
And Man Alive are the two.
Oh, I've heard of Man Alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're two big organizations in Auckland area, northern New Zealand. And I hung around for about 6 months. I went to their courses. I went to their retreats.
Cool.
And they invited me to do a rites of passage program that they had just begun a few years earlier. So I did co-leadership on that. I had more experience with boys than they did, and they had more experience with men than I did. So we cross-mentored for each other.
Great.
And when I came back to Vancouver in 2004, I was just very fired up with what they had going on and decided to launch a business out of it.
Okay.
That's the story.
That's amazing. Well, it sounds like this New Zealand, I mean, it's, you know, paths to our awakening and the work we do in this world often have these beautiful, you know, webs that weave together, and you're like,
absolutely,
I don't know, it was so magical how it happened, and it dropped in my lap at just the right time. Well, the universe is working wondrous ways, as always, all the time. So, a beautiful story. Some of the sources, then, of your inspiration and influence in your work, David, is coming from Essentially Men, coming from Man Alive, and then the collaboration that you did. So what did you do when you brought it back to Vancouver?
Well, there's more influences I've had, for sure.
Yeah.
As practitioners, those men were a huge impact on me because I got to see them. I got to be led by them, experience their work directly. My dad was an inspiration for me. He was a doctor, a very, very philanthropic-minded physician in Calgary who was very well recognized for that. But he had an interest in men's stuff, too, and I wasn't interested when he was, and he died in 99, so it's a source of loss for me that I'm not able to connect with him on this level at this point in my life. But the boys and men I've worked with are a huge source of inspiration and information for me. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's over 18,000 boys and men that I've worked with so far. And then some of the major writers in the field have also had an impact on me. Steve Biddulph, he's an Australian family therapist who's done great writings on boys and men. David Dieta, or Data.
Data, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it Data?
Data.
Data. Thank you for confirming that. Nobody's ever known. His writings, Vancouver area criminologist Neil Boyd, Warren Farrell, well-known American writer, and then two Canadian writers who really, I think they're doing fantastic work, Catherine Young and Paul Nathanson.
Okay.
And they've completed two parts of a three-part trilogy book series on misandry.
What's misandry?
Misandry is the dance partner of misogyny.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of this word.
There you go, right? So it's,
I want
it's
you
an
to spell
actual
it
noun.
For me.
It's misandry.
Wow.
Now, that could be misandry
it's not
or
often that I don't. It's not often that I learn something like this completely new, so this is all like, wow, cool.
Well,
I think
can,
I know everything.
You could punch it into a computer, and it might come up as a spelling mistake.
Ah, very cool. Yes, well,
yeah,
things like compersion.
Well,
compersion is still taking a while to catch on, but there's one there that is often corrected. What are you talking about, compersion? What the hell is that? Anyway, sympathetic joy, people.
Sympathetic joy. All right. Well, you've taught me something now, too. Great.
Anyway, it's often just in the polyamorous world that compersion really came from. Anyway, back to you. So misandry.
Misandry. I was
3-part trilogy on this.
Yeah, they finished 2 parts.
I'm fascinated to read it. I'll have to try to hunt it down.
Yeah, yeah. The two first parts are out. The third one's going to be about transcending misandry.
Cool.
The first one was spreading misandry. The second one's called legalizing misandry. And the third one's transcending misandry. And their work's actually being partially funded by the Canadian government.
Fabulous.
Very cool
to
hear that.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had some good inspiration, some good influence, some amazing work that you're doing, and 18,000 young men and boys, or boys and men combo, mm-hmm. I'm assuming. You're changing the world, small groups at a time, so this is really powerful, and I'm honored to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
So one of the questions that we wanted to discuss tonight was sort of going back to what's happening with men, this misandry idea. What role is homophobia playing in male culture right now that you see? Let's just talk about that for a minute, and then maybe we'll bring it back, because I do want to talk about rites of passage as well.
All right. 10 years ago, when I was workshopping with boys, teenage boys a lot, there was still a lot of young men in some of those sessions who were really comfortable and almost really desiring to be overtly, publicly homophobic when I brought the subject up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there was a lot of assumption that because I was speaking about it, I must be a gay man. So I even had boys in one northern community threaten to take me out and curb stomp me.
Mm.
And in front of 10 or 12 of their teachers, which was quite shocking to me. I would say that in 2008... The more overt voice I'm hearing on this subject from teenage boys now is hey, my uncle's gay.
Right.
And they're actually wanting to claim a closer connection to real gay men or real gay peers.
Right.
And there's questioning around, well, you know, are they born that way, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like the conversation has shifted fairly profoundly in 10 years to a much more open, positive place.
Right.
And at the same time acknowledging it's rampant. It's still rampant.
Yes, yes.
But I feel like a lot of it's unconscious. They throw the words, that's so gay around, shut up, you fag. And they're really not paying attention at all to what the actual meanings of the word could be for other people. And actually the roots of those words really are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with a little deconstruction on it and just opening up the floor to them to carry the conversation, not me, I'm liking what's happening.
Right.
So I'm calling them on it when they're... we do an activity where I actually ask them if they have a habit of using that kind of language. And, you know, 2/3 of them are saying, yeah, I do.
Right.
So I'm making a plea, and it's the only behavioral change that I ever directly ask of males.
Right, okay.
Is to stop using that language.
Mm-hmm.
Keep saying what you don't like, right?
Yeah.
Keep expressing your opinion and leave that language out, because you can't build a brotherhood doing that.
Right.
And that's what building male community is about.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good, definitely basic lesson. I think often people just don't even realize it. In my sex ed classes, the same thing. You know, they'll say something. It'll happen in a class, and I'll stomp it right away and be like, "Whoa, you know, there's what are you actually saying? How do you feel? Oh, well, you know, it's lame. It's like it's stupid." And then I'm like, "Well, I said, do you realize you're calling homosexual people lame and stupid by using those words and comparing the way you feel to that?" Oh, I never thought of it that way. You know,
so it's
often, like you said, just it's the wording. People just, you know, they fall back on these expletives. But You're right. It means different. You know, it's very important words for other people. Then they hear this, and it's perpetuating homophobia. I think, you know, I often see these posters against violence, and I see, you know, the worst thing that you can call a man is a woman. So I think the next worst thing you can call a lot of men are gay. So it's something that we need to continue to address and to look at, and why is there such a threat to masculinity? What is masculinity, which is the work that you're doing? Before we get into any more, I just want to see if there's a caller. Hello? Yeah, sorry. Caller, you can call back on the break, which will be in 5 minutes, so thanks. I just don't want to interrupt our interview. Don't know who it is. You might be looking for parking. This is often what happens when I get calls. I don't know how to get to the station. Okay, so rites of passage. This is a really passionate area for me as well. Mm. Something that is dire, like horribly lacking in our culture. A lot of cultures still do it. I think a lot of more basic cultures, some people, you know, cultures that are a little bit more, I don't know what to call them. I'm thinking the words that I'm coming up with are not the words I'm going to use, but developing countries, I think a lot of times still have a lot of rites of passage, you know, in a lot of religious communities, there's still a lot of rites of passage mm-hmm. existing. And these things are important. And I think we've lost them along the way in our development of our nations. And people need that, you know, they need the acknowledgement of moving through life changes. And, you know, we still get the retirement parties, but, you know, like, what happens when you get your period? What happens when you, you know, first start growing body hair or whatever it is for men that they, you know, want to really move into manhood? You know, how do you get into that? And it's so critical. So how does the rites of passage fit into your work, into all this?
Fits like a glove, fits into everything. Totally equally sharing your passion on this subject. We pay severe prices for not initiating our boys right. and our girls into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, we can launch into a long conversation about this in about 2 minutes. We're going to cover it, but.
Okay. So how it's playing in right now for me as a practitioner is the reading that I've done, the research in the field of rites of passage, and also doing, being a co-leader twice in New Zealand in their rites of passage work. Has given me some theoretical and some practical understanding of how this stuff works. I was never initiated formally, mm-hmm. and virtually nobody that I've worked with was initiated formally. So it's a lot of two steps forward, one step back. It's mm-hmm. a creative challenge. But there's ways, and I'm doing this with teachers and educators and parents as well in some shorter sessions, just teaching them a little bit about what the hallmarks of rites of passage processes are and a couple of ways they can introduce a bit of that terrain into daily family life or daily school life.
Right.
And they're loving it. Mm-hmm. It's like a lightning bolt goes on when I start bringing that topic up and we start exploring how we initiated ourselves as teenagers in mm-hmm. the absence of some kind of formal process.
Right.
Because we all did.
Right.
It has to happen.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, for a lot of men, I think it's, you know, the first time you have sex or whatever, that kind of intercourse of whatever kind. I think, you know, a bar mitzvah, bat mitzvahs, these are so mm-hmm. powerful. But I think, for me, I think it's the social construction of being a man or a woman and the responsibilities that comes with community building that, that the rites of passage, I think, really is so powerful and serves the world so powerfully, is that if you can give young people that sense that they are now an adult and they have to exist as an adult and be responsible like an adult of their actions and their feelings and everything that they do and what are you going to contribute as an adult? You mm-hmm. know, you've had all this time to grow up, to gain who it is you are. Now what are you going to give? You know, and I think if we can direct the energy of young people towards, which they want to be doing anyway, if you give them a chance to be inspired by life, they're so inspired, they want to help, they're fabulous. Agreed. You know, I love youth. I work with them and I just love them and have so much tenderness for them because they're sort of in this lost space of like not quite adult yet but not taken seriously but then see themselves as very much adult and they're in this, you know, never land thing.
Absolutely.
Or stuck, you
crazy
know, and they're
making.
Like, God, what am I going to do with myself? I'm such a loser. No one likes me because I'm a kid and I really feel like an adult and I want to be an adult and it's just, it's unfair and it's not serving us, like you say. So we could be utilizing this youth energy and this passion in such a fabulous way and powerful way and in society and rites of passage, I believe, to be a very powerful progressive way of effective way of making that happen.
Yeah. In Australia, there's a Pathways Foundation, and their mandate, you can see them on pathwaysfoundation.au, I believe. Mm-hmm. And their mandate, their goal is to do rites of passage for every single youth in the entire country, male and female, which is very ambitious. Their societal dynamics, their socioeconomic sort of markers are very, very similar to Canada's, and here they are just tearing it up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I like this ripping and tearing. Is this from New Zealand, this talk?
Definitely.
Well, we're going to be back with more on this very fascinating topic with David Hatfield. But first, I must tell you that you're listening to Juice Box on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Keep that dial locked. And, of course, we do welcome your calls at this time especially. So call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. And we are going to be playing a little balancing of the genders for the Brazilian girls. And we're going to be playing tonight from their 2006 album. What is it? They're from Toronto, and it's called Jique. So listen, and we'll be back.
Ce soir. Feeling. a beautiful day without a cloud.
The 27th Annual Vancouver International Film Festival will be held September 25th to October 10th, 2008. VIFF is among the largest film festivals in North America and is one of the largest cultural events in Canada. The broad spectrum of fiction and non-fiction films from around the world is divided into the following sections. The Ark, Elements and Animals. Dragons and Tigers, The Cinemas of East Asia. Non-fiction features. Canadian Images, Cinema of Our Time, and Spotlights on France.
Films are screened on the following 10 screens: Empire Granville 7 Cinemas, Van City Theatre at the Vancouver International Film Centre, Pacific Cinematheque, Ridge Theatre. To purchase tickets, visit the Vancouver International Film Festival Centre on Seymour. For information, check out www.viff.org or call 604-683-FILM. That's 604-683-3456.
Yes, it comes in a downward direction. It disintegrates, dissolves, melts everything.
Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yes, you are back in the box. Thanks for tuning back in. And if you're just at the top of the hour, you missed us, we are talking with David Hatfield. And he's going to be discussing Stirred Not Shaken, this fabulous event for men coming up October 25th. A full day event, looks like, 12 hours or more. Should be a good one. So welcome, David. Thanks.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about this event. It really caught my eye. I was at yoga and I walked by seeing Stirred Not Shaken, an event for men, which is really a rare thing these days. So tell us a little bit about this October 25th.
Yeah, October 25th in East Vancouver from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. So it's a long, full day. Stirred Not Shaken is an event for men. It's a, as we were speaking about earlier, it's an opportunity for men to gather to explore male identity without judgment or competition, and to build a sense of male community. And the name comes from the inverse of the James Bond vodka martini preference, right? Mm-hmm. So we're really spinning the whole idea of, like, ridiculous cartoon, invulnerable superhero guys. And it's also meant to be a really accurate description of how a man feels at the end of the day. Like, he's stirred with a sense of possibility, new thinking, new ideas, his own and other men's, but not rattled by it in a negative sense, like he's questioning his whole male identity. That's not the point.
Right.
Right? And he's hooked into a network at the end of the day as well.
I love that. I love the idea of that. Now, I come from a great community of men who do male retreats sometimes, and they wear these little pendants. They've all been on the retreat, so we all know in the community who's been at these emotas, I think the male.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't been able to get there yet, but
yeah.
I'm really keen to try it out.
It sounds really cool, and yeah. The women in the community are like, we want our own emotas. Why don't we have something like this? So we tried with one of these retreats recently. We tried to put it together, but it kind of failed miserably. But anyway, it's because women are putting it together. I have my own thoughts about that.
No, I'm not touching that.
Yeah, you can just leave that alone. So fabulous. I really highly recommend it. And it sounds like, I mean, we can't talk about price on the air, but it is a very reasonable price, I can guarantee you. Do find out more at davidhatfield.ca, spelled exactly how you would imagine Hatfield to spell. Okay, so back to our interview. I'm interested to know what you think is happening for boys and men in terms of dating, in terms of relationships, and, of course, being a sex show in sexuality.
Mm.
What do you think is going on?
For the really young boys, I'd say it's the typical stuff. They're nervous, they're shaky, they don't have a lot of real information. These are for really young boys.
Mm, sex ed is sadly lacking. As a sex educator, I can tell you it's horrible.
No, you're the expert on that one. I'd say the difference for them is over, you know, two decades ago maybe, the whole world's way more sexual.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's another whole level of confusing complexity that nobody's really helping them, you know, move through. For teen boys, they've come through that same sort of amped-up sexuality culture. And some of their responses to me are just, they're concerning, you know? But they also make sense in some ways. One of them is the sort of pack dating thing, where dating's not really cool. Nobody really chooses somebody to go out with that's not as common, and it's not seen as all that cool either. It's more like you just hang with your crew mm-hmm. of guys and that crew of girls, and you go off and do stuff, and then you have hookups.
That's kind of, the pack dating thing's been around forever. That's kind of a normal thing for young people to do, just so you know.
Yes.
But the hookup thing, the hookup thing may be a little different, but...
Yeah, but
for young people, like if you're talking in the beginnings of sort of like anything from 12 to 16, 17, I think that's not unusual to do the pack dating thing. But the hooking up as far as the cross-pollination of the sexual activity, that's kind of a new thing that's happening for sure.
Uh-huh,
but hanging out together and not really like just all being singled out and just,
yeah, for
you
sure.
know. But anyway,
yeah.
It's just kind of they're practicing with each other to sort of see how the whole dating thing works, you know. But the sex thing is happening. I think the practicing around the sexuality is a newer, you know, that the trading partners and having these hookups and the casual sex is definitely more new, or at least it's happening way more than it used to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other component that I find really concerning for myself as an educator who really focuses on really straight up communication is just the distance of communication through MSN and texting,
mm-hmm.
that they're still dealing with really intense social intimacy and sexuality issues by pushing buttons on a cell phone.
Right.
I do a piece in my boys' work around relationships, like how to start off, how to know if someone has an interest in you, how to, you know, they just want to know how to read signals and all that. All their focus is on getting started, which makes sense based on their age and what they're into. In terms of maturity and experience at that point. What I also want to get to is, like, how do you break up? Mm. How do you deal with it when it's going badly? Like, how do you talk openly about sex to get it started or when it's happening? And that's when I started to hear the stuff like, oh, I just MSN. Mm. We want to break up. How have you guys broken up with somebody in the past? Oh, I sent a text. Did you guys ever talk? No, not so much. And that's not the categoric answer, but it's something that again, I wasn't hearing a lot, you know, when I first started. And I'm hearing a lot more of it now.
Right.
So okay. that's the difference that I think that having an open dialogue with an older male or older male figures, hopefully plural, who are encouraging them to, like, you know, man up, like, here's a place to man up in a different way. It's like, man up emotionally. You know?
You mean to, like, face the person and talk to them about what's going on?
Try and stumble your way through it. Even if the words don't come out that well and you kind of muck it up a little bit, or your face is really red and you feel stupid about that, like, it's way more important that you learn how to do that now than learning how to blow people off and pretend you don't have any feelings about that.
Right.
Or they're blowing you off and you don't have any pretending you don't have any feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about both kind of breakups, whether you're initiating or you're on the receiving end, because they're pretty different experiences, as we know.
Yes, well, that'll be a whole other show we could talk about for sure.
Right.
Just
on.
Around the breaking up coaching. We've had shows just all about that. Mm. How do you break up?
Great. It's fantastic. Uh-huh. You know, I wish somebody talked to me about that. You know, I've got my own stories of just really harsh emotional shutdown in high school when somebody was trying to break up with me, and it coming out of me in 3 seconds as an instinct, and me being really shocked and surprised by that, feeling really superior over the girl for about 10 steps as I'm walking away, and then realizing again I'd totally blown it with her. I should have talked. Didn't know how to go back to it.
Right.
With older men, I was thinking about UBC men when I was on my way up here, UBC age men, and thinking about when I was a UBC student.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd take all those issues we've spoken about and then, you know, add a few more years into the mix. And now you've got some much more serious level relationships building here. And in a lot of cases, probably people living together for the first time and inhabiting for some of the first times that kind of mother, father, I mean, not that they're having children, but they're starting to role play in an unconscious way and sometimes
a conscious
way. And even if
they're in a homosexual situation, there's still the role playing that goes on.
Yeah, like, you know, this is now the adult world of adult relationships, like we watched our parents and our friends' parents going through this stuff.
And TV.
And TV and all the media input. So I feel like for the men's side of it, I think that messaging around strength, you know, invulnerability, not looking stupid, just the sort of male script is amped up even higher. And again, I just worry about the lack of intentional masculinity work, where maybe a young man's in his 20s and has some really serious questions about his relationship, and he can access his friends and stuff And in the same way that teens struggle with that, they don't have much more life experience than the person in question. So if he doesn't have a group of, or even a couple of older men to go talk to, older women are also super valuable in that regard, then he's kind of left, as I was, to kind of stew about it. And I'm just kind of going back and forth in my own thinking, and I can't get out. You know, so unless I stumble into some new groove in conversation with my partner one day, I'm kind of just rattling around in my own cage.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of damage, unnecessary damage, gets done in a lot of those relationships due to, again, this script that disables men from opening up in those places of vulnerability and saying, I don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, because of the strength thing.
Yeah. You know, and not having role models of sort of inquisitive men being around them asking really difficult questions and watching
emotional
men sift
questions.
Through that. Emotional questions, questions around sexuality, questions around how to deal with sort of male and female different ways of knowing and being.
Just love and...
Love, absolutely.
Attachments and security, insecurity, body stuff, all that, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Love is... I'm glad you actually brought the word love into this because it's one of the four-letter words that I think boys and men are most afraid of.
Mm.
And one of the pieces I do in a lot of my men's work and boys' work is for them to break into small groups and tell love stories. And the love could be, for some of the younger boys, they haven't been in love with somebody, but a place that you loved, a thing that you loved doing, a person that you love for any reason, a romantic love or a platonic love. And God, they're just freaking out when they have to sit down in the groups. And then they get into it. And it's awesome, you know, they get into it with each
That's
other.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such good work you're doing. What is the most difficult part, then, do you think, of your work?
That's such an easy question to answer.
Well, that's good.
The most difficult part of doing masculinity work is getting men to come to it.
Mm. Yeah.
It's figuring out how to word the invitation so precisely, and I work at this every day.
I can see by your flyer. It's fabulous. It says values, heart, sweat, wisdom, humor, respect, diversity, community, expression, brotherhood, sustainability, personal truth. I think you've really gotten it down to a fine art on your flyer here.
Thank you.
All men are welcome. All men. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I had someone ask me what ages was the limit on your retreat, but what do you have? Like, is it for like age of consent, 14? Like what...
Well, it's pretty rare for a lot of men's work that I've seen and led myself or been a part of as a participant. And again, this speaks volumes to how far we have to go with this work. It's very rare to see a man under 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, they're on plenty of fish, these dating sites, which I find very interesting. But then the internet world has really changed the generation before us, I'm assuming you're about my age. And so online dating and all this stuff on Facebook, whatever, it's all just very normal. And so that's how they're meeting each other and getting to know each other and finding dates and hooking up and all that when they're in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And high school is no longer happening and they don't have that constant pool of available, you know, sex partners or relationship partners. So, you know... It's interesting, but yeah, again, not knowing how to navigate the communication skills and the emotional work and all the other stuff and until they get into real crisis, which is usually men over 30 where they've, you know, focused enough on their career and they feel that they've established this or they've been lost for so many years or they finally start to go, oh, there's something missing in my life. I think I need to get some counseling or I need some help or finally they, I think men start to sort of have had enough relationship struggles or sadness in their life where they're like, you know, I think I need some help. Something's missing. And so thankfully for you and for other people doing men's work, it's becoming a little bit more acceptable just in general to say I need help and I'm looking for more than what I have in my life. And it's more of an emotional thing. It's more of a community building thing. It's more of a identity, personality, you know, value system, whatever it might be. And I think that, you know, I mean, I find more and more men coming to me asking me for relationship counselors or, you know, they're the ones that want to help the relationship work better or fix it. And I think women have been supported for so long to do that emotional work from the very early on in our life that and all through our lives that and we're supported to do emotional work that men haven't been so much, as we talked about in the early part of the show around the emotional bandwidth and et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just expressing those emotions and how to access them and be okay with them and et cetera. I'm getting off topic here, but you're following me.
I think
that the men are starting to come is what I'm trying to encourage you to, and other men listening, that it's okay. It's becoming very okay to do this and to get excited about it and to actually want to celebrate opening yourself to new horizons, whatever they might be.
So. Well, you've got me all fired up now.
Okay.
In a positive way, which is good. I want to make it really clear that a lot of the men's work that I've seen, and definitely the men's work that I'm doing, this isn't for broken men. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no assumption that a man is in some kind of crisis because he wants to come to this. This is for all men. And some men are in crisis, and that's why they come. Other men love it. They love being brothers with other men, and mm-hmm. they just want more of it, so they're showing up. And the real pitch I'd like to put out tonight, maybe for this audience that's listening, a lot of men in their 20s, that's the demographic I'd like to see more coming into this. And the older men love it when younger men come and vice versa. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And there's a natural affiliation to want to be around men of different ages. Mm. And the older men often say in these circles, in these events, that they want to help out the boys and the younger men.
Right.
And there's a real desire for them to connect. And again, we've got a pedophilia phenomenon here where there's so much suspicion and creepiness around an older man being interested in a younger man for the sake of, you know, his development. And older men are really negatively affected by that. They want to be mentors. They want to be friends.
Yeah.
So I just really want to lay that down with emphasis. This is for all men. And it's really fun in a way that I can barely describe to you. It's meaningful in a way that I can barely put words on. Mm-hmm. It's like plugging into this really age-old socket where this repository of male wisdom hangs out, just waiting. All I have to do is show up and be there in a group full of men, and then the magic starts to happen. And again, most men in this part of the world have had no experience with that. Outside, in a public realm with a lot of men, they've had it in their male-to-male friendships, maybe with a good coworker, a best friend, or a sports team or something. And so there's familiarity to it as well, but there's this whole other bandwidth, like you were saying, of sort of male knowledge and education and relaxation
beingness.
Thank you, that's the word.
I think it's really cool that some of the stuff you say online is sort of what men can expect in Stirred Not Shaken on October 25th is to experience the value, humor, and wisdom of a circle of men. Mm. I think that really puts it well. To be a better partner, a better father, a better friend, ability to express yourself, to enjoy spontaneity, creativity, and physicality. Very important. And I really get that there's a sense of a need for community among men. I think that, again, women are very much supported to be social. And we're all social creatures, men and women, all of us. But women just have that so much more so support around that. Mm-hmm. And so it's something, brotherhood is a very important part, I think, of our evolution, of our return to you know, the important things in life and the ways that we need to guide each other to be the best we can be. So you're doing good work, and I really uphold your important values and what you're doing here. So thank you. Is there anything else you want to talk about with Stirred Not Shaken? Because in the last 5 minutes, I just want to talk about the other side, which is some of the work you might do with women.
All right.
Just in case some listeners are like, what about women?
For Stirred Not Shaken, I think we've talked a bit about it. You can see more information about it on my website, davidheppel.ca, and just give a day to yourself as a man. Mm-hmm. That's my my invitation.
Men, it's super reasonable. I can't even tell you. It includes dinner and lunch as potluck, and it's so reasonable. It's crazy. And I think what Mr. Hatfield is after is probably gathering the community that it will take to build this and have it sustain itself eventually.
Definitely.
Which is really the point to a lot of our work as educators, I think. All about building programs that sustain themselves in schools as well. Anyway, so I just, for the last little bit, what do you do for women? How does your work support them? Just in general.
Yeah, absolutely. In two ways, I feel. One is women are saying this, and I've done lots of co-gender work, and a couple of times I've been invited to lead all female groups, which is very precious experience for me. I've only been invited to do it a couple times. They want men to feel okay about expressing more of themselves, to bringing more forward, to being able to put words on things. They want men to feel more comfortable about being male. They want their male partners and friends to have more male friends.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be the single source of emotional support and processing, right?
Absolutely.
You're rolling your eyes already. It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's exhausting
and it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The suicide rate for men after divorce or death of a spouse skyrockets. And I mean, it makes sense. It's an equation.
Yeah.
So that's something that's in it for women. Definitely.
Okay.
And as far as... Oh, I lost my train of thought on that.
Let's just talk about, you know, what do you recommend then for men to sort of ways of being, things that they could read or work on? I mean, obviously coming to your work is important. We did talk about some of the influences of your work. You know, how do we better support our men and boys?
As women, one thing I asked of women when I'm working with them is for them to encourage and support men to explore men's work. Mm-hmm. And men's work, masculinity work, two titles for the same thing.
Okay.
So encourage men to give it a go.
Okay.
Is one thing.
Right. And be in touch with you, obviously.
And yeah, stay in touch with me. I've got a resource section on my site. If men are looking for resources for reading, I've got a few DVDs and things like that. There's some websites, and there's a radio program, a syndicated radio program in the United States, the only one in North America, that does gender issues from the male perspective only.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's on your site?
That's on my site as well.
Great. So finally, what are your long-term plans? What are some of your visions for the future?
Oh, I love this.
So, with the 2 minutes we have.
Okay. So for my own work, as a practitioner, I want to see Stirred Not Shaken as like a full residential event, probably 3, 4, or 5 days in length.
Great.
And there's a second event I'm launching on the Sunshine Coast in November called Paradigm.
Mm.
And that'll be a second level program that's going to start.
Cool.
For the community, I want to see more. I'd like to see men's health centers. And I know some people here are working on that. I'd like to see crisis phone lines for men.
Mm.
There's two crisis phone lines for men in Auckland.
There's one here.
There's one.
There's one here somewhere.
Great. That means there's at least two in Canada that I know of, right? We're a little behind on that.
Yeah, we're behind on that.
I'd like to see some more men's shelters. I'd like to see rites of passage programming become mainstreamed into school. I'd like to see father-daughter work, co-gender work, creative programs for men as well, not just focusing on always on male issue stuff, but creativity stuff, circus stuff, drumming and singing, movement, writing, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
Great. Politically, I'd like to see academic men's studies. Hello, UBC. Calling UBC. We
need that. Gender studies.
We do have gender studies, 90% women, 10% men's.
I've read
focus.
Some books on male masculinity and gender over the years.
And it's good. I don't want to diminish that, but I do want to bring in a voice asking for men's studies.
Yeah.
We as men, we need that.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see some advocacy work around some legislative changes that have been made through the last couple of decades that a lot of people are now going, hey, I think that's too heavy on the side of women. Sort of divorce court being one of them, just to sort of some critical looks at that.
And parent rights.
Parent rights, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, valuing fathers and fathering. I think that's been a place we've really shot ourselves in the foot. Deadbeat dads, looking at sort of divorced families in terms of this sort of shadow lens being put on the fatherhood part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good research being done on the strength of fathering in raising a healthy family of boys and girls.
Right.
And we need co-gender work. We need lots and lots of co-gender work. There's nothing more fresh that I've ever experienced in any gender work than a group of empowered females and a group of empowered males who know that the other group's been working the exact same stuff, the exact same time. And when they actually enter the same physical room and sit down together, the energy and the vibe of that environment is totally unique.
Yeah, it's a synergy. It creates a larger thing than the two groups or this, you know, what men can do and what women can do together creates more, you know. So that's the power in the synergy. So absolutely agree. I'm sorry I have to cut us off. I would love to have another hour with you, David Hatfield. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
It's been a pleasure. And the Juice Box Girls highly recommend you and your work after tonight for sure.
Awesome.
You can find David Hatfield online at davidhatfield.ca. So, all right. We hope you enjoyed tonight's Juice Box. I know I did. And although I missed Caroline, It was a fabulous show, thanks to our guest. So if you have recommendations for a topic you'd like to hear, or if you want to hear from any more from any of our guests, please, we can always have them back. Email Julia at Juicebox Radio or Caroline at juiceboxradio.com. Coming up next, Hans von Kloss's Misery Hour. Now, Marion, if we had a video in here, you could see he's a very sexy man to be miserable with. Tune in to Juicebox Radio every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. Oops, and I'm supposed to do this fancy engineering. I forgot. Thanks. You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.